Greetings! This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. Today is Monday, August the 3rd of 2020. In this episode of Word Magazine number 172, I'm going to be offering a response to James White's doubling down on his refusal to debate Mark 16 verses 9 through 20. On Saturday, that is August the 1st, I posted Word Magazine 171 titled, Why Does James White Refuse to Debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? Then, in what I perceive to be an effort at damage control and trying to spin or control the narrative, James White quickly responded with a blog post over at the Alpha and Omega Ministries blog site later that same day on Saturday under the title, This Really Isn't Hard. So what I want to do is I want to go through this blog post, this response that James White wrote, doubling down on his refusal to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20. I'm going to read his response paragraph by paragraph, and I'm going to offer my own responses to him, reactions and responses paragraph by paragraph. Of course, as usual, I am going to post this as well to my blog, jeffriddle.net, and you can read my notes that I have for this presentation. So let's start off with his opening paragraph. Hope it's not confusing, but I may be going back and forth. I'm going to read his paragraph and I'm going to offer my response. But this is his opening paragraph. James White writes, On July 28th, I commented on the dividing line about an invitation to do a debate with Dr. Jeffrey Riddle on textual critical issues, specifically a comparison of his position, TR onlyism, and the critical text position, mine. I attempted to plainly and clearly lay out the main issue. Dr. Riddle has responded with an article accusing me of refusing to debate him. As anyone who listened to my comments knows, I did no such thing. Okay, let's give my response. Well, if James White did not refuse the invitation to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20, my question is, why are we even having this conversation? Obviously, he did refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20. Clearly, he refused this invitation. James White also does not provide any answer to us to the questions that I posed in Word Magazine 171. That is, why did he break off the three-way conversation that was being had with me and with Samuel Nason of Explain Apologetics as we were trying to work out a possible online debate? Why did he break off the conversation and go to his dividing line audience? He also never gives us an explanation as to why he did not respond to what was my final offer. I offered to do two debates with him. The first one on Mark 16, 9 through 20, and then I agreed that I would do a second one, or I offered to do a second one on a TR reading, a TR passage that is supported only by a minority tradition. And I had suggested the possibility of Acts 8:37. Why does James White refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? Let's go on to his next paragraph. He writes, This is not a difficult issue. Dr. Riddle represents a small minority position without representation in the wider field of scholarship. You can see this plainly in the dialogue that took place early this year between Peter Gurry, James Knapp Jr., and Jeffrey Riddle. The portions can be found here and here. I commented on the dialogue on this edition of The Dividing Line. Okay, here's my response. I agree with James White. This is not a difficult issue. Why does James White refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? If he will not debate me, a TR advocate on this topic, why doesn't he set up a debate with James Knapp Jr.? Notice how James White tries to minimize me as a debate opponent, since he says I represent what he calls a small minority position without representation in the wider field of scholarship. So let me get this straight. Is he refusing to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20 because I do not have a proper academic pedigree? I don't have the proper academic credentials that meet his standard? Is that what he's saying? I've noted a number of times that the confessional text position, not TR onlyism, as he repeatedly calls it, I've noted many times that it is, in fact, a minority position. We don't deny that. It's just plain to acknowledge it. Even among those who are confessionally Reformed, those who hold to one of the classic Protestant Reformed confessions, our position, the confessional text position, is a minority position. Does this mean that because it's a minority position that this topic should not be discussed at all? Isn't the Reformed Baptist position generally a minority position overall among those who are confessionally Reformed? According to James White's logic here, does this mean that a Reformed Presbyterian should be justified in refusing to debate something like baptism with a Reformed Baptist because Reformed Baptists are only a small minority in the larger, wider Reformed world? On the other hand, is the TR position really a minority position when we consider the fact that a great number of Christians all over the world, from many different denominations, from Pentecostals to Eastern Orthodox, continue to read and use translations in various languages based on the traditional text? In the English-speaking world, for example, the King James Version and the New King James Version continue to be consistent bestsellers. Recent surveys by Lifeway suggest that many still prefer to read the King James Version. It's often said that the King James Version is the most widely read Bible in English. It's based on the Textus Receptus. So he's going to dismiss this as a minority issue. I don't think it's a minority issue at all. Does James White only engage in debates with those who are deeply involved in mainstream academic scholarship? Remember, that's also part of what he said. He said, I represent a small minority position without representation in the wider field of scholarship. So let me get this right. James White only debates people who are deeply involved in mainstream academic scholarship. Well, all you have to do is go back and review his dividing lines or look at his vaunted list of all the public debates he's done, and you see that this is not the case. He's done many debates with people who are not involved in mainstream academic scholarship. My question is James White being inconsistent? Is he attempting to justify and excuse his refusal to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20 by saying this is a minority view and it's not represented in mainstream academic scholarship? James White notes the dialogue that I had with James Stamp Jr. and with Peter Gurry. Given White's position, does he think Peter Gurry made a mistake when he engaged in a conversation with me and Pastor Snap because we're not involved in supposedly in mainstream academic scholarship? We don't hold the proper credentials. By that same standard, then, should Bart Ehrman have refused to make his one and only joint appearance with James White 11 years ago, which James White never ceases to talk about? Should Bart Ehrman have refused to have done that with James White because Bart Ehrman is a highly published, highly involved mainstream academic scholar, and James White doesn't have the proper academic credentials, and he's never published any academic works in the field of textual criticism? Should Bart Ehrman not have done that debate or the conversation, joint appearance with James White because he wasn't properly credentialed? I'm going to leave it to the readers to make their own judgments and listeners on the podcast regarding the validity of these supposed objections that James White is raising. Why does James White refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? Let's go on to the next paragraph. James White continues. He writes, now there are a shelf full of books on such topics as the longer ending of Mark, the pericope adulteri, etc. In fact, there is a fine four-position book on the topic that was published just over a decade ago. I would primarily agree with Daniel Wallace's chapter. There is profit from discussing this text amongst those whose positions are dependent upon textual critical analysis, manuscripts, etc. So let me respond to this statement. So is James White saying that the discussion of textual variants, major textual variants in the New Testament, such as Mark 16, 9 through 20, and John 7, 53 through 8, 11, and others, is he saying that this topic has been so thoroughly and definitively discussed in academia that there is no longer any need for any further discussion on these matters? Really? Is this the way academic research and discourse happens? Hardly. These issues are still hotly debated and discussed. They're still hotly debated and discussed in the academy, and they are still hotly and fervently debated in the pew among scholars and laymen alike. James White notes a book that appeared on Four Perspectives on the Ending of Mark. Yes, I know the book well. In fact, I wrote an extended scholarly review of that book that was published in the journal American Theological Inquiry, even though I hold a minority position in text criticism and I'm apparently not engaged in real academic research. I'd love to hear James White tell us more about how he agrees with Dan Wallace. Does he agree with Dan Wallace on Dan Wallace's rejection of the doctrine of providential preservation? I'd like to hear him respond to Dr. Maurice Robinson's winsome arguments in that book in favor of the originality and authenticity of the traditional ending of Mark. Surely that brief book, however, is not the end of the discussion. Why does James White refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? Let's go on to his next paragraph. He continues and writes, "But this is the real issue. Dr. Riddle's acceptance of the longer ending of Mark is not due to how many manuscripts contain it, how early they are, or of what character they are. His reason for accepting the pericope adulteri, likewise, has nothing to do with manuscripts, the history of the text, etc. And he is open about this. It is actually part of his critique of the majority position, which would include the majority text position and the Byzantine priority position, in fact, all textual critical positions. His critique reflects the reality that he is not presenting a textual critical position. He is presenting a theological position that overrides all textual critical considerations. This came out in the dialogue linked above, and it is found in every single presentation from Text and Canon Conference done in 2019 featuring himself and Robert Truelove, available on Sermon Audio." Let me respond now. Well, if the confessional text position is so obviously incoherent, then James White should have no problem dismantling it. He says that I, as a TR advocate, one who holds the confessional text position, he says, quote, that I am not, quote, presenting a textual critical position, end quote. I would modify that statement by adding two key adjectives to correct it. I am not presenting a modern reconstructionist textual critical position. This is a point that James White, unlike others, continues not to grasp. He also persists in somehow dismissing our position as supposedly a merely theological position. Again, this seems odd in the extreme. Is James White saying that his position is not a theological position? Isn't his modern reconstructionist position based on a 19th century reimagining of the doctrine of preservation? Or again, does he reject the Westminster doctrine of providential preservation altogether, as does Dan Wallace, with whom he says he agrees? If so, does that cause any problem for him when he would say that he is confessionally reformed? Does he hold to the Westminster standards, to the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith? Isn't James White supposed to be a presuppositional apologist? Well, why then is he saying it's a problem for someone to have theological presuppositions when they approach the doctrinal issues related to the text of Scripture? I want to thank James White for recommending to his readers the Text and Canon Conference lectures. Unfortunately, he forgot, if I could put that in scare quotes, to include a link to the lectures, and so I'll add that in my notes. Yes, I do hope people will listen to those lectures. If those lectures are so inconsistent and so illogical, then James White should have no problem dismantling them. Why does James White refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? Let's go on to his next paragraph. He continues, "Therefore, to actually debate Riddle's position requires Riddle to defend readings that are unique to his position, not those that he shares with others. Why? Because his position specifically eschews consistency of textual critical methodology. Since he begins with a theological conclusion, the Textus Receptus is the providentially preserved text, or what James White calls the PPT, it's not a term we use, its readings cannot be questioned. Therefore, he can use arguments for the longer ending of Mark, found in the TR, that are different from and contradictory to the arguments for the pericope adulteri. And this is not a problem for him. The manuscripts in history do not matter. So there really is no meaningful basis for a comparison of textual critical conclusions, since his position is not actually derived from textual criticism." Let me respond to this paragraph. First question, how does James White know that my arguments in favor of the traditional text of Mark 16, 9 through 20 will be different from and contradictory to, as he puts it, my arguments in favor of the pericope adulteri? Is he a clairvoyant? Does he know what I'm going to say before I say it? I think my argument for both of those texts would be completely consistent. They're both texts that are supported by the majority. They both have a strong history of ubiquity, of ecclesiastical usage, of historical and theological reflection. They both appear in the printed editions of the Textus Receptus. I don't think I would use different and contradictory arguments to support the traditional ending of Mark and the pericope adulteri. I'm wondering how James White is able to anticipate, without us even having the debate, what I would say regarding those texts. Why don't we actually have the discussion, and then you can actually respond to the things that I say. And if I say something that's contradictory, you can point that out, and you can make a good debating point about it. He ends by saying he cannot debate Mark 16, 9 through 20 with a TR advocate because our position, he says, is not derived from textual criticism. Once again, two key adjectives need to be added to correct his statement. The TR position is not derived from modern reconstructionist textual criticism. James White forgets a very important part of this proposed debate. The discussion is not merely about my side defending the TR reading. It is also about James White defending the modern critical text reading. See, he wants to make it all about him attacking the TR position. He wants to avoid having to defend his perception of the modern critical text. Why does James White refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? Let's go on to his next paragraph. It's a pretty long one. Let me read it. James White writes, "So this is really easy. The only way to engage with Dr. Riddle's theological position is to look at those readings that are unique to the TR. By so doing, you have a fair, clear comparison of two positions. If he uses different arguments to defend different readings in the same text, his position is shown to be incoherent, unless he makes it clear from the start that the arguments are not actually relevant, that the TR is the PPT, and the listener should simply accept this without argumentation. But the point should be clear to anyone. If Riddle's position is true, then what text we are looking at should not matter, as his reason for accepting the reading of any particular passage has nothing to do with its transmission history. It has to do with an action of God at a certain point in history that established the text for all generations thereafter. That reality will not be seen when he hides amongst the Byzantine or majority text folks. It will be seen when he defends the unique readings of the TR, such as Ephesians 3:9, 1 John 5:7, or Revelation 16:5. Given his teaching and preaching, these texts are just as genuine, just as revealed, just as providentially preserved as the longer ending of Mark. So why not address them? Only by doing so will he be defending the unique claims of his own position." So, now let me respond to this. So, James White says, "The only way to engage with a TR advocate is to discuss readings that are unique to the TR. But the TR does not consist only of readings that are supported by minority traditions. In fact, most of the TR agrees with the majority text. I would submit that one could not, in fact, have a meaningful discussion of the TR without considering texts like Mark 16:9 through 20. James White assumes that a TR advocate will use what he calls different arguments to defend different texts. But doesn't the modern critical text position use a variety of arguments in its reconstructed critical text? For example, it rejects the majority text in omitting Mark 16:9 through 20, but follows the majority text in omitting Acts 8:37. Is that inconsistent? James White also seems wrongly to assume that the modern critical text has produced a uniform method that has resulted in a uniformly agreed upon modern critical text. That simply is not the case. He also continues to ignore the fact that the purpose of a debate on Mark 16:9 through 20 would not only be for the TR advocate to defend the traditional reading, but for James White to defend his modern reconstructed reading, whatever it is. If James White does not believe that Mark 16:9 through 20 is an appropriate text to examine in discussions related to the TR, let me ask again why he included a discussion of Mark 16:9 through 20 in the appendix to his 2009 revision of the King James Only controversy. Again, I've made it clear. I'm willing to do two debates. I'm willing to do the first one on Mark 16:9 through 20. I'm willing to do a second one on one of the very passages he suggests. In fact, I suggested Acts 8:37 would be an excellent subject if he wants to talk about a text that is only supported by the minority tradition in the TR. Why, however, does James White continue to refuse to debate Mark 16:9 through 20? Here is his next paragraph, and this is his final one. He writes, "I have made it plain for years. I find the infiltration of TR-onlyism into the Reform camp an apologetic disaster. Hence, I would be willing to step away from other writing projects and duties to engage Dr. Riddle on this specific topic. I would not be interested in other debates that have already been done. Note the book linked above. This debate with the actual heart of Riddle's position has not been done. It is not I who is refusing the debate. I stand ready to do so based upon what I think is a clear and compelling case." Let me give you my response to this final paragraph. So, James White says that defense of the TR is an apologetic disaster. I think he said in his podcast last week that those who hold to the TR, we have an anti-apologetic. It seems to me, however, that this is hardly the case. Has Dr. White listened to the Confessional Bibliology Roundtable number 3 in which Pouyon Mershaii discussed why the TR is actually preferred for apologetics, especially with Muslims? And this is coming from someone who is not giving esoteric or theoretical discussions about interactions with Muslims, but someone who is on the ground doing witnessing, forming congregations, leading Bible studies. And he says that actually the TR is the preferred text in doing apologetics with Muslims. It seems quite the contrary, that when Protestant and evangelicals began to embrace the modern critical text, that this led to what is the real apologetic disaster. The Muslim apologists have not posted videos from the Text and Canon Conference that we had in Atlanta in 2019 to their YouTube sites. But Muslim apologists like Muslim by Choice, they continue to use James White's videos. In fact, Muslim by Choice has an entire playlist devoted just to James White's teaching on text. Muslim by Choice does not, by the way, take James White's presentations out of context. He doesn't even offer any comments upon them. He just lets them play in their entirety. It is clear whose material he finds most useful for his cause. Let the reader consider this. James White says, "It is not I who am refusing to debate. But that's clearly not the case. In this discussion, there is only one person who has offered to do two debates, one on Mark 16, 9 through 20, and a second on a TR text based on the minority tradition, and I've suggested Acts 8, 37. And there is only one person who has refused to debate, and that is James White. Why does James White refuse to debate Mark 16, 9 through 20? Well, this brings this episode of Word Magazine to a conclusion. I hope that this has been helpful and edifying for those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next Word Magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.